On Tuesday afternoon, as the tornado sirens went off, I huddled down in the church basement with other members of staff and the children from our child development program and the members of the women's knitting group, alternating between panic and sheer boredom. And I don't know if you were stuck in a basement somewhere and had to fixate on the local weatherman giving reports of where the tornadoes may or may not have been, but, you know, there I was with about 200 other people down in the church basement. And, you know, in those situations where you're caught by a tornado, you sort of think, what to do? So after getting kind of bored watching the weather reports, I sort of rifled through the church's magazine racks to see if there was a magazine that I might be interested in reading. And what I really wanted to read was the cover story in Texas Monthly on Southwest Airlines, because it was titled Love and War. I thought, well, this will be very interesting. But of course, someone grabbed that before I was able to reach for it. So I opted instead for a Time magazine. Now, it turns out that we clean out our magazine racks about as often as your dentist's office does. So I grabbed the edition from January the 9th, which promised to tell me everything I would possibly need to know for success in 2012. And boy, I just feel a lot better for having read that. It appears we're getting a lot dumber these days, because Time magazine is now filled with charts and graphs and full-color pictures and quite a lot of things except actual articles, which would require, you know, reading, which I thought Time was supposed to be about. Anyway, the article I read, which was accompanied by a graph that took up half a page, talked about fear. And according to the article, we are afraid of the wrong things. And we tend to be afraid of the wrong things because we innately misjudge the actual risk involved in various things. We tend to fixate, as human beings, on perceived threats that aren't really hazardous, while we overlook the real dangers, because the real dangers don't set off those subconscious alarm bells that say, danger, Will Rogers, danger. You know, for instance, we are afraid of cell phone radiation because over the years we've heard that too much radiation is not a good thing, that too much radiation can give us cancer. Never mind the fact that numerous health studies have shown no conclusive link between cell phone use and actual health risks. And we're afraid of flying because the news is often full of plane crashes, like the one that happened on Friday. But we're not afraid of driving, and we're not afraid of driving because we're in control of our cars, or we are if we're not texting and putting on lipstick and eating a Big Mac while we drive. And feeling in control tends to dampen our fears, but flying is actually the much safer activity. 30,000 Americans died in car crashes last year, and zero Americans died in a commercial plane accident. Now, given that we are such poor judges of actual risk, you have to wonder how much time we have wasted being afraid of things like communists and artificial sweeteners and rejection, and intimacy, and death, and God. How much time have we wasted being afraid of things we have no reason to fear? Of course, as I said, we're not afraid of what we control. We don't fear things when we have systems and processes to deal with what life throws our way. And so the women who went to the tomb that first Easter morning weren't afraid. They weren't afraid because they went to the tomb with what Marilyn Robinson calls the expectation that with Jesus' death, things will have taken their ordinary course. After all, they had witnessed Jesus' crucifixion. They had seen his hands and feet pierced by the nails. They had watched as his lifeless body was removed from the cross. They had looked on as his corpse was wrapped in linen cloths and laid in a tomb for burial. They believed that he was, in the way of mortals, dead and gone. So they set out for the tomb that first day of the week to do what custom and ritual and tradition said ought to be done for the dead. They had brought their spices in order that they might wash and anoint Jesus' body to perfume it before the inevitable decay set in. Grief has a process all its own, which enables us to control our fear. Only when the women arrived at the tomb, nothing was as it should have been. Turns out, once again, we misjudged the actual risk. The one thing the women had feared, how it was exactly that they were going to roll away the massive stone that had been put in place to seal that tomb, proves not to have been a matter of concern at all. The great stone had, in fact, been rolled away. Furthermore, the body they were expecting to find was not there. Instead, there sat a young man, very much alive, dressed in a white robe. And he told them that they wouldn't find Jesus there. He had been raised. He was making his way to Galilee, where his disciples would find him. "Go," the young man had said, "go and tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee, where you will find him just as he told you." And the women went, all right, only they didn't go and tell the disciples and Peter, at least not right away. The women simply ran from the tomb. Now, why the women ran from the tomb is a matter of some debate, and you find that debate reflected in the various translations that are available to us. It's very traditional to translate verse 8 to say that the women ran for terror and amazement had seized them, or that they were overcome with terror and dread. In other words, the women were scared out of their wits. They'd come to the tomb and not found what they were expecting. They were frightened. But then there's a more neutral interpretation, one that says that the women fled trembling and bewildered or confused and shaking all over. In other words, they weren't quite sure what to make of what they had seen and heard. And still another interpretation puts a pretty positive spin on things, saying the women ran away from the tomb, trembling with excitement. In this version, the women weren't afraid at all. They're not confused or bewildered. They're excited because they understand what the message means. The message of the young man means that the promises of God are true. The message of the young man means that what Jesus had predicted about himself has come to pass. What the message of the young man means is that God raised Jesus from the dead on the third day, just as Jesus had promised. Now, how we interpret this verse says a lot about how we understand the world and how we understand God relates to the world. An empty grave in and of itself doesn't answer any questions. In fact, it raises several new ones. And an unsealed tomb from which the stone has been rolled away itself gives rise to different possible meanings. It takes the young man's message to give these clues their meaning. But the message that Jesus has been raised from the dead, that Jesus is alive and has gone before his disciples into Galilee, proclaims the potentially unsettling news that, in Donald Jewell's characteristic phrase, God is on the loose in the world. And if God is on the loose in the world, then you either have every reason to be afraid or no reason to be afraid at all. You have very good reason to flee from that empty tomb in fear and terror if you think that the world works in predictable, routine, systematic, law-abiding kinds of ways where nothing is ever a surprise. And we build entire systems on that supposition. Banking systems, government systems, scientific systems. And there isn't much need for God in that world because the systems run themselves just fine, thank you very much. As long as cash is readily available from the ATM, as long as the US Army is at work in the world, as long as we enjoy better living through chemistry and technology, all is well. And God can be safely entombed in our churches where we laid him to rest. Churches that are as peaceful as cemeteries, where God is sealed up such that he can't get out into the world and cause trouble. An unsealed tomb and an empty grave. And the word that Jesus is alive challenge that world at its most fundamental level. The known world as we experience it is no longer reliable if the dead don't stay dead. God is on the loose, turning things over, doing a new thing. If we need God to stay put safely where he laid him so that he can't call us to costly discipleship and surrender our lives to him, then we should be very afraid. But friends, if you don't measure your self-worth in terms of dollars and cents, if your sense of security doesn't depend on the army keeping the world safe for democracy, and if science isn't the only way you apprehend the truth or experience the goodness of the world as God created it, then an unsealed tomb and an empty grave are no reasons for fear. In fact, they are reasons for celebration and rejoicing. The news that Jesus is alive means that we can indeed tremble with excitement and joy. The resurrection of Jesus means that you and I have worth because we are children of God. The resurrection of Jesus means that we are secure because Jesus has delivered us from the power of sin and death. Jesus has rescued us from everything that holds us back. The resurrection of Jesus means that we can experience God's truth and goodness and love and mercy because death has been overcome. Friends, what the young man said to the women, I say to you, he is not dead. He has been raised. He is alive. He goes before us into the world that he and the Father created. He is with us even now, calling us out into the world that he died and was raised to save. We have no reason for fear, friends. God is on the loose in the world and calls us to be with him there. Thanks be to God for the good news. Peace.